Hello, everyone, and welcome to Coastline with Fargo Moorhead Redhawks manager Chris Coast. Coastline is a weekly show where you ask the questions and the skipper gives you great lines and insights about the Redhawks, baseball or sports in general, or about life and relationships. In the introductory show, Chris tells us about what it means to return to manage the Redhawks. He tells us what it's like to win a World Series, and we learn a hidden talent of the skipper. So let's get right to Coastline.
Well, let's welcome manager Chris Coast. Chris, before we kind of introduce the show, I wanted to give an opportunity for, are there any team updates or things that are going on with the team right now that you'd like to talk about before we kind of introduce the show?
No, just basically the only updates we've had is we're still trying to figure some things out. Every team has a strong roster. You still have to trim some things down. We'll have some incredibly tough decisions to make. So now it's, while still dealing with the worldwide pandemic, trying to trim rosters to the needs and figuring out who's healthy and ready to rock. And a lot of moving parts, obviously, every year, but probably more so this year with everything that's going on outside of baseball.
Well, for fans out there, Chris is opening himself up to answer questions about whatever you'd like to ask during the season. So we wanted to kind of do a little introductory part for fans to get to know Chris a little bit better out there. So, Chris, let's first of all start with, how did your love of baseball develop?
That's a pretty simple one. When I grew up without a dad, my grandfather, which was my mom's dad, was like my role model. He was my guy growing up. So he was just a simple softball player. But since he was my essentially father figure, I thought he was the best player who ever lived. I was like 4 or 5 years old, and watching him play softball made me want to play baseball. The highlight of my day was him bringing me to the front yard or the gravel road at the lake and playing catch. So that started it all. Fortunately, I was a little bit maybe bigger, stronger, more mature than most kids my age. So when I was 9, 10 years old, I was one of the better players, which only increased my love. But really, to answer that question directly, it had everything to do with my grandfather.
Did you always envision yourself as a baseball player growing up?
Absolutely, and I think part of it was because I grew up in Fargo, and when you're a kid, you don't realize that there's this whole big world outside of your hometown. And since I was such a good player for my age in my area, that I honestly, when I was 10 years old, I thought I was going to be the best baseball player who ever lived. I come to realize that that was not going to be the case, but it's being a baseball player, a major leaguer, was something that I always wanted to be. I was fortunate to do it for a long time, but once again, to directly answer the question, absolutely. Growing up, the only thing I wanted to be was a baseball player.
Who were people or players that you looked up to in the game as you were growing up?
Early on, it was probably Kirby Puckett. You know, growing up where I grew up, we were Twins fans, so he was probably one of those guys. Other than that, I mean, I could list countless numbers or names, but he was the guy, you know, between the 1987 World Series, 1991 World Series, in our area, you know, you wanted to be like Kirby Puckett, between the energy and the smile and how good a player he was. So he was definitely the guy.
Yours is one of the most inspirational stories in sports. Was it hard to kind of keep pushing yourself when you're in your 30s and still, you know, kind of just a level away from the majors?
It wasn't hard to keep pushing myself for a lot of reasons. I joke with a lot of people that they give me too much credit for my story of perseverance, and sure, there was some of that, but I was fortunate to, when I was in the minor leagues for all those years, I was in AAA, and when you're that close to the big leagues and you're still doing well and you're staying relatively healthy and you're able to make a little bit of money. Nobody, in the words of Doug Simonek, nobody gets rich playing minor league baseball, but I was able to make a decent enough salary. I was playing winter ball, making a little bit more money there as well. So to want to walk away was not even part of the conversation. So it was easy to keep pushing myself. And then the most important factor in that is, well, I had really good support with, whether it's the family, wife, daughter, extended family, but also support from teammates, managers, coaches. And then seriously, the most important thing was I had the passion for baseball and a love for baseball that was so deep that even during the toughest of times, I was able to get through it because of that love. And that's the advice I would give anybody who thinks that they want to be a professional baseball player. you got to be really good. There's no question about that. You absolutely have to have elite level abilities, but you also have to have almost an unmeasurable passion for the sport, or you will not succeed.
I don't think that there are many people in independent baseball who have had this experience. So what's it like to be on the field when your team wins a world championship?
You can't even put it into words. It really is one of those indescribable things where you can't believe this is happening. There's no way this is what am I doing here? It's like, am I going to wake up from a dream? I still feel that way. You know, I was part of the 2008 World Series team, so we're looking at 12-plus years now. And I still wake up and wonder if it actually happened, because it's not supposed to happen to a guy like me from South Fargo, North Dakota. And to make the big leagues was one thing. That in and of itself felt like a dream, but to win a World Series, that's just, it was pretty incredible. The emotions you feel are, there's very few things that can give you that level of amazement or excitement, that positive feeling, you know. It's just, once again, you can hear me stumbling over my words because I don't have the words.
So this year you become the manager of the Redhawks. How does it feel to become a manager of a team you once played for?
It's a great thing, because for me it's less about, and you and I may have had this conversation before, for me it's less about the expectations and just keep this thing going and continue to grow it too. You know, it's we continue to need to evolve and get better and adapt to the surroundings, whether it's the business side of it or the talent level of it. Because when I played in the Northern League from 1996 to 1999, the level of play back then was incredible. But the level of play now is off the charts. It's absolutely unbelievable how much the ability level with our league has gone up. So to manage the team that I played for, like I said, it's not, I don't feel the pressure to have to win because it's me. I feel the pride in the organization and being an original member to want it to succeed on and off the field. I want to win a championship. Obviously, we're managers. We want to win. But I want to see at some point sell out crowds. I want to see the fans, when they leave the ballpark, they absolutely want to come back. So for me, the winning side as the manager's duty is to win. I always want to do that. But I also take responsibility in the fact that we have a duty to the fans, the media, things like that. So for me, I'm not a general manager. Our general manager does just fine, but I have a responsibility in my mind to go above and beyond just what a normal manager might do.
So you're named the interim manager a couple of weeks ago. Is this a job that you see yourself running after the season is over?
To be honest with you, Rob, and this is not the company line, I honestly don't know, because this is not a job that I was striving for. You know, I coached college baseball, and I was also the bench coach before this, and it was in a lot of ways, it was the perfect scenario. It was like, I get to be, you know, in some ways in college, I get to be the boss, and then it's nice to not be the boss a lot of times. Like, I've always thought that, like, being a major league bench coach was one of the best jobs in all the sports. It's, yes, there's pressure, but the manager is really, you know, so I absolutely embrace being the interim manager. But in some ways, that's a benefit, because this is not a job I was, like, striving to get. Hopefully, that makes me better at the job. That's the way I'm going to look at it. So we have a lot of stuff to deal with, trying to get through the season. It's going to be a season unlike any of us have ever experienced. And so when this season is over, we'll reevaluate and see where things are at. If I don't love it as much as I think I will, and the perfect person comes along who I could work with, I would have no problem going back to the bench coach. But if I feel like it's best for the organization and the players and myself, I would consider it. But the other consideration I have is my college position, which I don't have any intention of leaving, because it's just, and once again, you and I have had this conversation before, having both positions make me better at the other. Being a college coach makes me a better Red Hawks coach. Being a Red Hawks coach has drastically made me a better college coach. I did some good things as a college coach, but once I started coaching with Red Hawks, I'm way better with relationships, with my college players, just doing things a different way, a better way, being a better role model. It's just being with the Redhawks has made me a better person the way that college already has. So to not do both would be really tough.
You know, you have such a strong reputation and legacy in the community, and there at Concordia Moorhead as the baseball coach there. So I would gather the community has really embraced you being named as the Redhawks manager.
Yeah, I mean, I think the people who follow the team in independent baseball that know my name, I think a lot of people would think that it just makes sense that I would, if there's an opening, I would step in and fill it. But at the same time, it's, when I got hired, I made sure, whether it was the first press conference and most every interview I've done since, to amplify the interim title, the fact that this is an interim thing, and that we have to find a way to get through this season, and that it's not this season, the celebratory side of this season is not about me becoming a manager. It's about the fact we get to have a season. You know? So I'm fully aware that me becoming the manager has created some news, and it's a good story and things like that. So I have been embraced in that regard, but I also feel the duty to remind people that this is not the celebratory side of it. The celebratory side of it continues to be that we have a chance to have a season, and that, because once again, 2 weeks ago, three weeks ago, nobody thought we were going to have a season. All of a sudden now, we're preparing for opening day on Friday, so that's really the big news.
I'm sure you would agree that this is going to be a rather odd season. So what are the challenges of keeping your team focused on the game with so much other types of uncertainty going on out there?
To be honest with you, that'll be maybe the easiest part of our job, to keep our guys focused on baseball, because they're, number one, they're professionals. So no matter what the year, you get a team of professional athletes or baseball players who are trying to make a name for themselves and be recognized. That will be easy. And since there's very little baseball being played and there's more eyes on us, whether it's scouts, media, things like that, to get them to play at their best will probably never be easier. Nothing's ever easy, but if you look at it in that context, the excitement level for the players in this league should be at an all-time high. And if it's not, that player actually does not belong in professional baseball. And that's the way we have to look at it. Like, I look at it, if I was a player right now, what a gift to be able to be playing when so many minor leaguers cannot. So in that regard, for them to focus on baseball should be really, really easy.
What would you like to be the culture of the Redhawks, and how do you build that?
Two things, and it kind of goes back to what we've already talked about. You got to win. I mean, that's no surprise. And you're going to have your times where it doesn't work out. You're going to have times where you get lucky and players overachieve or they perform, things like that. But so winning is always going to be part of the equation, no matter what. But also, one of the reasons why I think it was important for the Redhawks to bring me on board was they know that I value the business side of it as well, the promotional side of it as well. Like, I'm fully aware that as important as the baseball is on the field, in minor league baseball, independent baseball, the promotional side is incredibly important. I embrace the fans. I embrace the media. I embrace the promotional side of it. I've always been a fan of the promotional side of it, whether it was Famous Chicken back in the day, the Philly Fanatic, the Dizzy Bat Race. And so the culture that I would love to be a part of is a winning franchise with respect, and I'm going to say this phrase countless times over the next many years probably, is after the game, when the fans are walking out of the stadium, they need to want to come back. We need them to say, why can't we go back to another Redhawks game? That's the culture that we all want to build.
That's awesome. Well, you know, kind of being in your first year as a manager, you have, I think, 6 years now serving as a college coach. I'm sure there are some pet peeves that you have that players do that kind of make you crazy. Are there some of those out there?
You know, there's very few things that I haven't seen, so you just get acclimated and you kind of deal with it. I want to make sure I said this the right way, because it's just kind of a lighthearted question. I want to try to keep it that way, but it's like, you know, it's whether the guys, you know, the guys who make it about them, or I want to make sure I say this the right way, because this is not a bad thing. It's like, because I encourage, and when we had our meeting, I encourage our guys to be themselves. We're not robots. You know, we don't need to be, we're not soldiers. We're individuals playing a team sport. So we can become a team and love each other like brothers, but we do also have to embrace our individuality as far as some guys are more showman than others. Some guys are not. And so as far as pet peeves go, the only thing that might stick out is maybe a Nomar Garcia para type who's got these crazy addictions to batting glove adjustments and things like that, which, once again, is more comical and notable. So I've never really been bothered by that kind of stuff, but you do take note of it sometimes.
For kids out there that would like to pursue baseball professionally, or parents who want to help their kids pursue that, what pieces of advice would you give to those kids?
And great question. You know, this, when I answer this probably a little bit differently than a lot of people, and I've actually answered some of it already in our talk today, but here's the two things. Regardless of what age you are, okay, if you want to play professional baseball at some point, you absolutely have to love baseball more than you could possibly imagine. You have to have a passion for it that when you wake up in the morning, it's the first thing you think about. When you go to bed, it's the last thing you think about. And the reason why is because professional baseball, like any professional sport, is incredibly tough mentally and physically. If you don't love it unconditionally, you will not survive. It's one of the things that got me through my career was during the toughest of times, I loved baseball so much that I got through it. If you don't love baseball, and that's why I've seen countless minor leaguers who had above average major league abilities, but they only kind of liked baseball during the tough times. They were not able to pull through it. So they retire, they move on, or they just don't succeed. So that's number one. You have to have a passion for it. Two, just as important, you have to be really, really, really good. And I know that sounds obvious, but just passion alone, or I want to be a major leaguer, doesn't cut it. Okay, that's what so many people forget is the level of ability to be a professional baseball player is absolutely, it's incredible. And until you've been around it on a daily basis and you see what professional baseball players, number one, their ability level, but the work that they put into it. If you were to see, everyone thinks that Chase Utley is just this amazing superstar. If you were to see the work that Chase Utley put in every single day, 365 days a year, you would be blown away. A guy like Jamie Moyer, who played until he was like in his mid to late 40s, whatever else, if you saw the work that man put in just to get ready for a start, if you saw the work that he would put in December in the offseason, you would be floored. And so the hard work, things like that, but people kind of forget, like, it's not enough to just want something. You actually have to be amazing at what you do, because in major leagues, what we're dealing with, on an average, you're 750 players, give or take, on an active roster. So 750 of the best baseball players in the world. That's incredible to think about. But at the same time, you have to start with the passion.
You know, I always thought kind of jokingly that Jamie Moyer, he always had to start each day remembering where he was at, because he kind of moved around a little bit there. So, and make sure he remember what city he was playing for that day. So, great career.
The funny thing is, like he had a big RV and a big family, and that's kind of how they travel around quite a bit. You know, he had this checked out RV, so it's kind of, you know, a little backstory there.
Awesome, because he played till I think the 25 seasons in the majors, something pretty crazy like that. So good for him. You know, I'm frequently asked by wives on other shows about how difficult it is, or what kind of recommendations you would give to husbands to keep in contact with their family. Because, you know, you're out on the road quite a bit, and so what would you say to a dad out there to keep in contact with their kids while they're away if they're out for their job?
Well, nowadays with technology, it's a little more easier because you can go right on FaceTime on your cell phone, and you got Zoom videos or Skype or GoToMeeting. There's all these different technologies where you can actually, you know, video wise keep in touch. You know, back in the day when I played, it was a lot of cell phones. You know, text messaging had just started up a little bit. But even to try to get, whether I was in, you know, Mexico playing winter ball or on the road for a week, things like that. But to be honest with you, the biggest key in that particular situation is a player, or like even if just in regular life, if you're on the road, you have to have an incredibly understanding family, whether that's your wife and kids or just your wife or fiance, things like that. Because I was pretty lucky. My wife and I have been together since we were in high school, and she was You know, there was never a day, like, for example, if I would have told her I wanted to retire, she probably would have slapped me in the face. So you have to have an incredibly understanding time, because I had seen plenty of situations where that was not really the case. And kind of like a player who doesn't have the all-in passion for the sport, if you don't have an incredibly supportive family or fiance or things like that, it makes it almost impossible to survive it. So really, between the technology and the ability to stay in contact is important, but really it's all about who you surround yourself with, whether it's your wife, fiance, kids. And I was incredibly lucky that, you know, my wife and I have been together since we were 17. She knew what she was getting herself into, and then my daughter was born into the life, so it's the only thing she's ever known. So I was lucky in that regard.
So your very best coach was at home, it sounds like.
Absolutely. Yep, absolutely.
Baseball players are known to be superstitious. Do you have superstitious nature there, Chris?
Not a superstitious nature. More so the general things, like if when I was a player, if you had a certain food and you had a good game, you might try to repeat that, and vice versa. If you do terrible, you might never eat at that restaurant again the rest of your life, type of stuff. So mine were basically just that simple, and sometimes it might be during the anthem, when you're standing there and you're kind of thinking about things, you're following along, you can't help but, you know, think about the game or things that are certain thoughts. And if you have a good game, the next anthem, you'll try to go right back to that exact same thought. Or if you have a terrible game, the next anthem rolls around, you're going to try to avoid that thought, whatever it might be, as much as you can. For me, the one thing I did, especially when I was in the major leagues, and it was kind of a superstition, but it was more of a motivational thing, was there was one game, and I really hadn't started to succeed very much in the big leagues yet. I was still trying to find my way, but I was in the starting lineup, and I think we were playing against, like, the Cardinals. And I looked at I was on my way up to the field, and I see the starting lineups for both teams, and I'm probably batting eighth. And I look at that lineup card, and I'm like, you know what? Today, I'm going to be the best player on this field. And I looked at, like, Albert Pujols was batting third. I'm like, for this one day, I'm going to be better than Albert Pujols. I'm not a better player than Albert Pujols, but for one day, I could be. That's what I told myself. And I think I had three or four hits in that game, and then we won the game, and I was doing the post-game interview for, like, Baseball Tonight or whatever it was. And it was just this amazing moment in my personal career, and so I pretty much did that the rest of my career. I make sure I looked at that lineup card and told myself more out of superstition, and it was motivational too. So that's kind of what I did.
That's awesome. And Chris, we'll end for this week by asking, what's a hidden talent of Chris Coast that not many people know?
So I grew up in South Fargo, and in an area, it was government housing, so most of my friends were from various countries. You know, I had friends that were from Brazil and various parts of Europe and Thailand, Cambodia, whatever else. So it was a very, very diverse community. So in the summer times, we were either playing sandlot baseball or volleyball. So I grew up, I was that weird kid who played volleyball. We didn't have a high school volleyball team, but I grew up, you know, loving volleyball. So I just had this unique, for my area anyways, with no, like, organized male volleyball, I grew up with this crazy ability to play volleyball. And so my wife played volleyball, I married a volleyball player, my daughters played volleyball, and if you walked into our house, you might not even know that I played baseball, because there's volleyball stuff everywhere. So that's probably the one, and I could probably come up with other things too, but really, like, volleyball is probably more prevalent in my household than baseball is, other than the World Series ring, that's about it.
That's awesome. Thanks for joining us this week, Chris.
All right, Rob, great talking to you.
We want to thank Chris Coast for joining us on Coastline this week. If you have your own questions you'd like to ask the Red Hawks manager, please send them to us at askchris@minorleaguesportsreport.com. That's askchris@minorleaguesportsreport.com. Please have your questions to us by Sunday evening so we can give the skipper a little time to review them before we record the show. I'm Rob Pannier, the managing editor of the Minor League Sports Report, and we'll see you next time on Coastline.